And our sermon text today is Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. It's never easy nor safe to be the son of a paranoid narcissist king. Among the barbarian tribes of the Franks in Europe in the late 5th and early 6th century, Prince Clodoric found himself in this very situation under his father, King Sigebert. Now, the history of the barbarians, especially the Frankish tribes, very complex, and not a lot of people dip into this history, but hey, I'm a nerd. So, well, the throne would be Clodoric's if he could just hold on until his father died. But the old tyrant, Sigebert, seemed nowhere near his deathbed and treated his son almost as brutally as he did the Roman villagers they preyed upon in their barbarous raids. The barbarian Franks had grown wealthy, sweeping across the much weakened and deteriorated Roman Empire. In fact, a rival barbarian Frank, Clovis, had sacked the eternal city, Rome, a century earlier in AD 410, a fact much lamented and bewailed by St. Augustine. Well, jealous for his power and throne, Sigebert suspected his son of conspiring to assassinate him and seize power. Consequently, the young prince Clodoric suspected his father of planning to kill him and so sent in assassins to his father's forests as Sigebert hunted. The hunter became the hunted. And thus, Clodoric succeeded to the throne of his father by treachery. But his rule and his power, which he flaunted like he had won it himself, was short-lived. Clovis, distrusting a patricide, had Clodoric assassinated himself soon afterward. Man. In the saga of Sigebert and Clodoric, we have Exhibit A of what not to do as father and son. The son, disobedient, the father, disrespectful and abusive. And it ended up destroying what should have been an orderly covenant succession within the family. Well, with this in mind, Paul exhorts the Ephesian fathers and children to heed the first commandment with a covenant promise. That is, children, honor your father and mother that you might live long in the land. All covenants have provisions for passing on the covenant to the next generation, all right? New covenant as well, us. And we have provisions for passing on the covenant to the next generation. And we see that work in our text today, okay? So let's take a few points, two points I would like to make with you from the text today. First of all, verses 1 through 3. Seed and fathers. Seed, that is children and fathers. Addressed to you today. Descendants of your parents, point one, descendants of your parents, knowing that covenant succession depends upon your obedience, honor your father and your mother. Kids, you should know by now, you're involved in more than just growing up and getting out of the house. There are covenant ways inculcated and expected of you. Now, we're working our way through the household code, as it's called. Chapter 5, verses 22 to chapter 6, verse 9, as you have your text open before you and perhaps can scan over that and see what's happening, huh? Now, explicit in our text is the implications for covenant succession now under the new covenant. Paul's exhortation is brief and pithy, but it's clear. He begins with a command that every household would assent to, at least in the ancient world, perhaps not in ours. You know, now we need to befriend our children. I'm my children's friend. Or they can make their own decisions, right, regarding their sexuality. In fact, the state will help conceal your transition. Progressive Marxists are intent on undermining parental authority at every juncture. But at least in the ancient world, all would have understood this command, children obey your parents. Now, what sets it apart is the significant qualifier, in the Lord. This puts it in a separate class from the pagan household. The obedience of a Christian child should be as obedience unto Christ. It is of the same kind and order as that exhorted to wives. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. As to the Lord. That's just not a throwaway line. How do we obey the Lord then? As egalitarians, perhaps? Do we negotiate? Do we compromise with the Lord? Come to a mutual understanding? Take up your cross and follow me. Lord, you must be speaking hyperbolically. Can we not come to a less radical understanding of discipleship, perhaps? Is that how we... Or be holy, even as your Father in heaven is holy. Well, Lord, we know, all of us know that that's nigh to impossible. Now, I can clean up my act a little bit, spruce it up around the edges, but be holy as God is holy? No, this is not how we relate to the Lord, in the Lord, do we? What is expected is that we obey to the best of our capacities, and with that same zeal and labor, children, obey your parents in the Lord. Child of God, we have many children, literally children of God here this day. Techna is the Greek word for child. And in case you older kids are flattering yourself, it doesn't mean you. No. Techna means any offspring still under the roof of his or her father. Okay? So, child of God, children, do you understand this? Your obedience, your willing and even glad submission to your parents. Oh, that chafes. I'm sorry. That should be as that you render unto Christ himself. Your obedience to your parents is an index, in fact, of your obedience to Christ himself. And it is affirmed as a thing that is right. That is, it is in accord with a standard. It's right. Implicit is a standard. Well, what is that standard? Huh? What is that standard? It is the law of God. Which law? Paul has no hesitation citing it. Honor your father and mother. So much for the law being obsolete, no longer applicable. We can put it away, have nothing to do with it. I'm sorry. Paul will have none of this. Honor your father and mother. It is the first commandment of the Decalogue with promise. And it is the fifth commandment of the Decalogue in order. To honor, Chabad, is of a piece with obedience, only it has much broader semantic range. Semantic range is it's a word's field of meaning. It can have many such meanings in a broad range, and Chabad does as well. It's more than rote obedience. Right? We're not here today inculcating when we say children obey your parents. He doesn't have in mind simply clean your room or don't eat yellow snow. He's not thinking even more broadly that don't have premarital sex or go do your homework. I expect an A on your report card. Yeah, these are some things that parents inculcate and they're right and good. But that's not all. It's not just do what you're told as an automaton. This has to do with covenant faithfulness, all right? Kids, this has to do much more broadly with covenant faithfulness. It is an honor that you give to your parents from the heart. That's not found in our contemporary pagan world. Outside of the first and second commandments, have no other gods before me and make no graven image. This is the one most often cited and alluded to in the whole Bible. To honor. as Dr. Mounts reflects with us on his in his book. He says, to honor, Chabad, means to esteem highly or consider someone or something as worthy of respect, reverence, and awe. When was the last time, kids, you said that your parents were awesome? Huh? Consider the context, then, for citing the authority of the fifth commandment. All the commandments are covenant provisions. Every covenant has a list of provisions which the suzerain, the king, expected the vassal to keep. The Mosaic covenant has 10 of them, the 10 commandments. Here in the fifth commandment, the covenant seed of parents, that's you kids, you're expected to honor parents as an integral part of keeping the covenant in force, capable of being passed on to the next generation. Your job is much bigger than you may have thought. You might have thought, well, I'm obeying so that just as soon as I can get out of the house, I can do what I want. No, much more than that, your obedience. If you don't do this, that is, obey and honor your parents, you threaten the successful transmission of the covenant to the next generation. Okay? That's what Paul is implying here. Do this, honor your mother and your father, and the covenant will be successfully transmitted to the next generation, that you might live long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you to possess, as the fifth commandment states. Much more at work here. This is what is meant by the fifth commandment, being the first commandment with promise. Now, redemptive history is filled with examples of both kinds of behavior. One threatening the transmission of the covenant, the other successfully handing it off to another generation. Isaac obeyed his father, Abraham, when they came to Mount Moriah, for example, and he became a willing sacrifice. Genesis 22 tells us, Isaac said to his father Abraham, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. And he said, behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So they went, both of them, together. Covenant bond there. The covenant of redemption was secured in part by Isaac's obedience. Jacob's sons were disobedient in turning Joseph over to death and slavery at the hands of the Midianite traders, right? They threatened the transmission of the covenant by risking the life of the very one who would end up delivering them in the famine. Covenant transmission would have been indeed short-circuited at the death of Joseph. But Joseph, on the other hand, was an obedient son in behaving in integrity in all that he did in Egypt, was he not? David, and we'll see with a little more detail later, David was a faithless father in dealing with his sons, exasperating, if you will, Absalom, and failing to properly judge his household in the matter of Amnon and Tamar. And Absalom, of course, was a faithless son in rebelling against his father David. Redemptive history is replete with examples of both faithful and faithless sons, threatening the transmission of the covenant when they failed, but succeeding in transmitting the covenant when they did, when they were faithful. So, as a consequence, the one who honors will have his behavior profoundly affected by that sense of honor. That child will not find his or herself going through a rite of passage, if you will. It's become almost an institution in our culture where he rebels against the system, challenging and questioning everything his parents tell him and defiantly doing the opposite of what they say. The cemeteries of America are lined with graves of children who died of drug overdoses, abuse, excess, violence, foolish acts as a result of disobeying and dishonoring their parents. One of my high school buddies did precisely that in the 60s. He protested the war in Vietnam. He experimented with drugs. He advocated and practiced free sex and thought that communism was the way to go. His parents were old-fashioned and square, out of sync with the times. They were not worth listening to, much less honoring. In his headlong rebellion, which is really what it was, he ended up committing suicide with a gun in the woods of Kentucky in 1971. I remember getting the news. That was a sobering wake-up call for me. Things did not go well with him, and he did not live long in the land. Now, we do not often resource the Westminster Larger Catechism, but they have some good things to say about this covenant relationship. Question 127 of the Larger Catechism asks, what is the honor that inferiors, that is children, owe to their superiors, that is parents? And the answer comes back, the honor which children owe to their parents is all due reverence in heart, word, and behavior, prayer and thanksgiving for them, imitation of their virtues and graces, willing obedience to their lawful commands and counsels, due submission to their corrections, fidelity to, defense, and maintenance of their persons and authority, according to their several ranks and the nature of their places, bearing with their infirmities and covering them in love, that so that they may be an honor to them and to their parental government. Kids, does that characterize your relationship with your parents? You owe that to them. And then question 128 says, what are the sins of inferiors, that is children, against their superiors, that is parents? The answer comes back, the sins of inferiors, that is children, against their superiors, parents, are all neglect of the duties required toward them, envying at, contempt of, and rebellion against their persons and places, in their lawful counsels, commands, and correction, cursing, mocking, and all such refractory and scandalous carriage as proves a shame and dishonor to them and their government. The Larger Catechism. Kids, youngest to oldest, know that your behavior is important. It isn't happening in a vacuum. God sees and knows you and loves you, and he wants to see the way you live honor your family and him. Your obedience is in the Lord. You're just as important as any other adult. You're just in training. That's the big difference. You're just as important as any other adult. You're just in training. When you're doing your homework or memorizing that verse or practicing on that instrument or washing the dishes or cleaning your room or mowing the grass, doing it, being happy about it, right? Can you be happy about that? Do it with joy. Know that God does see, and it counts as honoring your parents. You are being a covenant child. Obey, not just because you have to, but because you want to from a heart that means it. And kids, know that your obedience is important. You're being trained to live under the covenant that your parents are under right now. It will one day be yours to live in its fullness. They are responsible to God for you. They are responsible for handing off the baton, if you will, in the race of redemptive history. The 4x400 relay race is an exciting track and field event, usually closes that phase of the program, and in it, four runners carry a baton 400 yards apiece and pass it on to another runner. It goes all the way back to ancient Greece, where a message stick, in the center of which crucial orders or military intelligence was contained, and it was passed on to a series of runners in the army who carried it to its destination. The thing about the contemporary relay race that sets it apart from other pure running events is that you have to smoothly hand off a baton to another runner without breaking your stride, while he has to take it at just the point where he matches your stride. A matter of milliseconds delay or misstep can cost the whole team the race. You kids, you're about to take that baton of the covenant from your parents in the race of redemptive history. you too will carry it in your race of life and hand it off to your children. This is the succession of the covenant that God so treasures and values. Will you do this well, or will you do it poorly? Your obedience is bigger than you think. Will you take it smoothly and in stride, or will you stumble? That saying, taking everything in stride, comes from this idea of the relay race baton handoff. You take it and you hand it off in stride. Will you hand off the baton of the covenant skillfully and in a timely manner, or will you blow it? We're watching. God is watching. It is your duty. Honor your mother and father, that you may live long in the land. But Paul is not done here. That brings us to point two. Verse 4. Seed. Covenant seed. Children and fathers. Seed and fathers. Progenitors of your seed, knowing that covenant succession depends upon your faithfulness, nourish your children. Parents, we're not done. We're not dismissed yet. Parents, fathers in particular, the superiors, the parents, are admonished through the patriarch. Fathers. This is not just period language, which you can effectively ignore in our modern age, where patriarchy is an archaic system that has been replaced by a more enlightened, progressive approach to marital and family relationships, whether it be egalitarian or complementarian. No. Rather, it is indicative of the creational structure of the family. Let me say that again. It is indicative of the creational structure of the family. Patriarchy. Fathers, as head of the family, you are responsible for ensuring that the covenant is passed along to the generation you are raising. That means not dropping the baton by provoking your children to anger. Now, this is a nice, succinct phrase that summarizes the net effect of a careless tyrant of a father. And there's plenty of them out there. And I don't mind rebuking them either. When we find them. Nice, succinct phrase that summarizes the net effect of a careless tyrant of a father and what he can do to a child, too. Paul has already cautioned us about the negative effects of anger back in chapter 4. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, giving no opportunity to the devil. Devil loves to see anger, loves to see angry men. He can use it. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice, Paul says. And that provocation takes many forms, with many dire effects upon our children. There's more here than just poking with a stick, if you will. Once again, the larger catechism is painfully specific. It asks, what are the sins of superiors? That is, what are the sins of fathers? And the answer comes back. The sins of fathers are, besides the neglect of the duties required of them, an inordinate seeking of themselves. There's the narcissist, right? The inordinate seeking of themselves, their own glory, ease, profit, or pleasure. Commanding things unlawful or not in the power of children to perform. Counseling, encouraging, or favoring them in that which is evil. Dissuading, discouraging, or discountenancing them in that which is good. Correcting them unduly, right? There's the abusive tyrant. Correcting them unduly. Careless exposing or leading them to wrong temptation and danger. Provoking them to wrath. Or anyway dishonoring themselves or lessening their authority by an unjust, indiscreet, rigorous, or remit behavior. Divines spent some time on these questions. What we are exhorted to do is bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, on the other hand. And here Paul is hearkening back Nothing new here. Paul is hearkening back to the Old Testament covenant shaping of our children. Once again, fathers, you are covenant men and you are expected to behave accordingly. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. Covenant faithfulness, fathers. And that's reinforced throughout the Old Testament, too. Proverbs says, my son, do not despise the Lord's discipline or be weary of his reproof. For the Lord reproves him whom he loves as a father, the son in whom he delights. And in a godly covenant home, God himself will be their teacher. Isaiah puts it this way. All your children shall be taught by the Lord, and great shall be the peace of your children. I love that. Great shall be the peace of your children. Strive for this, aim for this, brothers and sisters. It is to this peace of your children that you should aim. Father, the peace of your children. And it's in the spirit of this command, command number 5, that the prophet Malachi foresees the time of that peace. He says, he will turn the hearts of fathers to their children and the hearts of children to their fathers, lest I come and strike the land with a decree of utter destruction. You see the consequences? The covenant must be passed on faithfully, such that the hearts of the fathers are turned to the children and the hearts of the children to their fathers. The larger catechism asks in question 129, what is required of fathers toward their children? And the answer comes back, it is required of superiors, that is fathers, according to that power they receive from God and that relation wherein they stand, to love, pray for, and bless their inferiors, their children, to instruct, counsel, and admonish them, countenancing, commending, and rewarding such as do well, and discountenancing, reproving, and chastening such as do ill, protecting and providing for them all things necessary for soul and body, fathers. And by grave, wise, holy, and exemplary carriage, that is how you bear yourself in general, to procure glory to God, honor to themselves, and so to preserve that authority which God hath put upon them. The larger catechism. Men, you are raising children more than just to take care of you in your old age. I used to tell my son the reason I had him was so I'd have somebody to laugh at my jokes. Now, in all seriousness, I had him for greater reasons than that, covenant reasons. But fathers, you have serious business ahead of you in raising your children. Redemptive history is replete with examples of both kinds of fathers, once again. Fathers who provoked their children to wrath, and those who indeed brought great peace to their children. David is exhibit A of the negligent, careless father who provokes his children to wrath. He refused to discipline his son Amnon after Amnon seduced and raped his sister Tamar. Such was the rage and scandal that it provoked in the family that the righteous indignation felt by her brother Absalom stewed into a murderous wrath when their father, King David, neglected to punish Amnon. David's negligence and indifference provoked Absalom to anger such that he slew his brother Amnon. And there was never peace in David's family hence. In fact, Israel went into exile because of the disobedience of David's sons. Don't be a David when it comes to husbanding your family, fathering your children. Now, Jacob is a counterexample who successfully passed on the Abrahamic covenant to his sons. He handed off that baton, if you will. In fact, in Genesis, we have an example of perhaps the most blessed way to die in this veil of tears. The most blessed way to die. God gives us Jacob in his death. This blessing for his faithful covenant inculcation of God's ways with his sons. The text tells us in Genesis 49, "Then Jacob called his sons and said, 'Gather yourselves together that I may tell you what shall happen to you in days to come. Assemble and listen, O sons of Jacob, listen to Israel, your father,' he said." So with all of his sons present, Jacob blesses each in turn. You can read that for yourself in Genesis 49. The text tells us, blessing each with a blessing suitable to him as Jacob is lying in his bed. Then with no screams of pain or groaning or cries of woe and regret, the text tells us, when Jacob finished commanding his sons, he drew up his feet into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people. You will not find a more blessed way to die than this in all of Scripture. It's given to us as just a blessed example. So, fathers, the commandment holds promise. You are covenant men and expected covenant behavior from you, the Lord does. Children, the commandment holds promise. You will be covenant parents yourself one day if you faithfully take that baton of the covenant from your parents. Jacob knew this and treasured it and he sought it. Now, they don't provide a hagiography of Jacob's life, right? He may have been a grasper, a conniving seizer of that blessing, if you will, but he knew it and he cherished it and he passed it on successfully to his son. The Reformed faith, the biblical faith, that is, sees this New Testament covenant heritage and exhorts you to it. The law has not passed. The fifth commandment has not gone away. It is there for you to obey and to keep as well. I exhort you to this. Hand off that baton of the covenant faithfully to your sons and daughters. And sons and daughters, faithfully and skillfully receive it. Now, I often complain that my fathers I grew up under, plural, that is my grandfathers, my uncles I consider my fathers, as well as my natural father, all of them. My fathers may have been proud, hard-headed Dutchmen. And they were, like Jacob, right? Proud, hard-headed Jew. Proud, hard-headed Dutchmen I grew up under. But they knew this to their bones. And to the best of their abilities, they passed on a covenant heritage to their subsequent generation. So, this Reformed faith, this biblical faith, we exhort you to, as Paul does. And it really is time that we bring this back to the life of the church. That's why we preach it. It is time we bring this back to the life of the church, because by it we glorify Christ, who is building his church as well. This is entirely consonant. The covenant that we have with families is entirely consonant with the covenant of grace that has saved us. And Christ is continuing to build his family, if you will. We're called sons after all, are we not? We are sons by adoption, grafted into the life of God's Son by nature, the Lord Jesus Christ. So, brothers and sisters, let us be very conscious of this here at New Geneva, because it is time in a dying world, dying kids, frustrated, empty kids, dying kids, without a way. It is time that we bring back this covenant life of the church to our society and culture, and preach it, and most of all, live it. Let us now come to that place then where we see God's covenant ways communicated to us in the blood of the new covenant and the bread and wine of the supper of the Lord.